I'm Casper Dogovins, Dogman, and listening to Sixth Sense Podcast.
Oh, meet me down by the river. Oh, meet me down by the river. Meet me down there. It don't matter which river. It don't matter which river. They're all going somewhere. They're all going somewhere. Well, just as long as you're looking for me. Well, just as long as you're looking for me. Well, just as long as you're looking for me.
Welcome back, Sense fans, to the Sixth Sense Podcast. We're missing Tim, but it's a superb panel that we put together here. I'm joined in studios by Francois Creech, who's here probably, what, December?
Yeah, it was winter. I guess it's still winter.
Still is. Snow's melting. And we were joined by Yahoo Sports' Buzzing the Net. Is it a blog on junior hockey? Am I saying the title correctly, Nate?
Yeah, I guess it's Buzzing the Net at Yahoo Canada Sports, if you want to. Want to be a fit if you want to get into name, rank, and serial number.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So Ottawa won last night. I believe they're what, five points back of Florida and the Islanders for the second last spot in the Eastern Conference, and I believe they're a point ahead of the Colorado Avalanche and about what, 6 points up on Edmonton, I believe.
Yeah, 5 points back, Florida, New York, and they're not catching Edmonton.
So the question that I want to ask, to put forth to the panel right now, is you have Ottawa, a team that's won some games, strung together some games. They're playing better of late. And is it good to do kind of want the team to lose a little bit? Like, what is your definition of a true fan? Is it better to relish in the games that are being played right now, or is it to kind of hope for that better draft pick and the better lottery odds that go with it?
I'm a Sens fan. I consider myself a Sens fan. But I'm definitely cheering for losses. It's kind of weird. I find myself cheering for them while I'm watching the games, but definitely hoping for a loss. The perfect scenario is a loss with a good effort. That's what I like.
Yeah, you want that. You want that sort of slow clap type of game, you know? but I'm obviously cheering for the other. Having grown up cheering for the other NHL team in Ontario. Obviously, you kind of want to see some wins, but not too many, because you know that, and then it sort of validates everything that the organization has, you know, that you know and loathe them for. Because let's face it, the best fans are the ones who are full of the most hate, right? not a love hate type of deal. So, and overall, you would like to be picking as low as possible. Third overall pick has more value than the fifth overall pick, and so far on down the line, so. But again, at the same time, you care about the player. You do try to care about the players, and it's terrible to play on a team that loses game after game and goes out there knowing that they don't have much of a shot. So overall, if they can win one every three or four games, I guess that's the best case scenario.
But you've kind of been through this the last couple of years with the Toronto Maple Leafs, right?
Well, yeah, that's not really because they haven't had a first round pick.
They're like a team, like a phoenix rising from the ashes at the end of the year, and
yeah,
they have that late.
I think it's called low leverage situation, all over but the crying salary drive and whatnot. It's like that baseball team that is like under 500, and then they go to like 20-10 in September. Because everyone's trying to pad their numbers to get,
it's like
get
the
a better
JP,
contract.
Yeah, it's the JP Ricciardi era Blue Jays.
Yeah. You care a little more at the end of the year. They're going away for a while. It's going to be like 4 months until there's any more games. So you want to see a few W's.
What say you, Francois?
I think from a selfish standpoint, you're hoping for as many losses as possible, because then you'll be able to enjoy the fan experience that much more moving forward if you get a top pick and the team starts rebuilding. But it's just, after the better part of a decade being emotionally invested in this team, when you're caught in sort of the heat of the moment, for lack of a better term, of the actual game itself, it's pretty hard to cheer against your team at that given time. But I think from a long-term standpoint, obviously you're kind of hoping for losses, because it'd be nice to get that one of those lottery picks, one of the higher ones.
Looking back at last night's game, I see Jason Spezza and Erik Karlsson step up and have some strong performances. And I think if if you're watching the young building blocks of the team step up and perform, it's one thing. But like when you're noticing like Ryan Shannon score on a breakaway, you're kind of like, I don't know. You're kind of ambivalent towards the success that he's having because, you know, he's not really a long-term cog on this team.
Yeah, you're kind of like, oh, that's good for him, you know, a little something for the folks back home.
I saw Carlson last night, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Carlson and Regan. Regan's shoulder seemed fine. He wasn't having any issues, you know, putting the old glass to his mouth. Carlson had a wicked slick back hair, too. It was sick.
He was looking good.
Yeah, they were looking great.
So
Zach Smith was there. Dude has a gut, man. Doesn't look like a hockey player.
Look a little bit like Tyler Ernison there.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, Nate, last time we had you on the show, you were mentioning a number of prospects that you had your own particular eye on, guys who you figured would kind of ascend the ranks. And one of the names that you dropped early on was the name of Ryan Strome. And I was looking at ISS's most recently released scouting rankings, and they had Strome. I believe he moved up from like the high teens or mid-teens to the fifth overall position. So kudos to you for having the good eye. What have you noticed about his game of late?
Well, he's a bit similar to Tyler Seguin. I mean, he obviously needs to, like any 17-year-old, he's obviously got to mature, you know, physically and whatnot. But I mean, you look at the numbers. I mean, you guys know that already. He's tied. Here we are on the last day of the Ontario Hockey League regular season, and he's tied for the scoring title with 106 points for the Niagara Ice Dogs, and that's a team that's. And it's not like they're overplaying him because, I mean, this is a team that's so deep. They've got a guy with 40 goals on the third line. But he's really improved his play without the puck in the second half of the year. I mean, he really, you know, stepped up the puck pressure. You know, he's really good in his own zone. You know, he's a guy who gets right on the opposing defenseman, even though he's probably about 180 pounds soaking wet right now. And he really distributes the puck well. I mean, Niagara actually uses him as the point man on the power play. And this is, like I say, a kid who doesn't even turn 18 until after the draft. So, I mean, he's really ahead of the curve and he's really, you know, progressed, you know, rapidly. I think the only reason he was so far off the radar was just because of the circumstances he came into the OHL under, because he was drafted by the Barrie Colts because, I mean, he was, like I say, a kid, sort of a late bloomer physically. He gets drafted by Barrie. They were a stacked team. They were going for the, you know, OHL title, so there was no ice time for him, basically. And then they, you know, and they used that window in January when you can trade your first-round selection, and he was traded to Niagara. And, oh, coincidentally, you know, the Barrie coach, Marty Williamson, a few months later goes from Barrie to Niagara, and now Niagara's a powerhouse. Figure that one out. You know, he's really just come on strong in the second half of the year, and the fact that Niagara might be able to make a playoff run in the OHL is only going to help him rise. I mean, that's sort of what happened for Jeff Skinner last year. You know, the Kitchener Rangers, you know, went all the way to Game 7 of the conference final, and suddenly Jeff Skinner, who was, what did Central Scouting have him, 34th, which everyone thought was crazy, now ends up being the number 7 pick, and now he's a Calder Trophy candidate. Not saying Strome is going to go straight to the NHL at 18, but at this point, it's probably a lot more on the radar than most people would suspect.
Are you surprised? Are any of you surprised, really, by the amount that Sean Couturier has slid over the past number of months?
Not really. In so much as he had a lot of talent around him in Drummondville during his early years, and he's a big guy, and a guy like that, I mean, well, you know, the reputation of each league in the Canadian Hockey League. I mean, a guy with his size can dominate a lot more in the Q than he would in the OHL or the Western League, just because, you know, the average player isn't as big. I mean, now this year, I mean, you're sort of seeing, I mean, Drummondville's not as deep as they were 2 years ago, last year, and he sort of had to fend for himself a little more. I mean, he can still bowl past guys. Sort of joke that... you know, he's the kind of guy who'll skate through three people to get to the net, and then Jonathan Huberdeau, the kid on St. John everyone's talking about, he'll skate around three guys to get to the net, and I think that's probably what maybe a smart team is looking for. I think if you get Couturier, you're getting a player, but he might be a third liner. You get Huberdeau, you might have a superstar on your hands.
I think what affects Couturier's draft stock is the fact that people are really questioning whether there is any upside at all with him. I mean, his body is already NHL ready, so there's not really any potential for him to fill out physically. He's a solid two-way guy, not overly flashy offensively. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot of upside there. It's kind of like in the NFL draft, you know, like when you're getting sort of like that fourth-year quarterback out of the SEC or whatever, and people are wondering, like, well, how is he going to translate to the NFL? Like, projectability-wise, I think people are starting to get concerned that Couturier probably is not going to get any better than he is right now. And it probably doesn't help that he's just been so much bigger than everybody else in the league he's been playing in. So, I mean, I don't know. If Ottawa drafts Couturier, am I disappointed? Absolutely not. But because that's the hand you're dealt. But I don't know.
You're almost worried that he's going to turn into like the next David Legwand, like a slower David Legwand, right?
Yeah, I mean he's a safe pick no matter where he takes him. But and I think you're definitely going to get a regular player even if he slides down to like sixth overall, which I believe is probably somewhat likely at this point. But you know, it's every time you see him, you're just kind of like, you want to see a little bit more, you know. And that's how I felt watching him in the World Junior. That's how I felt watching him in the top prospects. And granted, I mean, that's not a huge sample size, but, you know, you're just not seeing it. Meanwhile, like other guys, you know, I've been lucky enough this year to see like Ryan Nugent Hopkins play in person, lucky enough to see Jonathan Huberdeau play a couple times. And you're just like, okay, I get it with those guys. But
so then moving forward, if I can ask you guys, let's say Ottawa's on the board, right? And clear, like, I mean, the consensus guy to take with their pick would be Couturier based on, you know, what their pick is or whatnot. Is that a situation where maybe you start to look at dealing the pick for a current NHL player thinking, how do you approach that situation?
I would always rather make the pick. I mean, what slot are you imagining them drafting at now? Like second, fourth?
Well, it looks like they're going to, if they finish third, they can only move up to first or fourth. Yeah. So it's tough because, like, I think going back to, like, this safe and NHL-ready kind of prospect, there are two guys on the board who jump out right away, and that'd be Landeskog and Couturier. And I think the highest upside guy in terms of ceiling is probably Nugent Hopkins.
Yeah, that's how I felt all along. I mean, I know why in the NHL the mindset seems to be, well, we got to get the guy who's, you know, going to be here next year, or then the media will be like, you know, quite insistent on the subject of your first-round pick. Where is he coming? When is he going to be here? When is he going to be here?
And then,
I think that's the exact wrong approach. I mean, I think I'd rather have the guy from when he was 20 to 26, not 18 to 24 in a salary cap league.
They don't need help next year.
Well, that's the problem, right? Because if you bring in whomever they draft next year, you're losing one controllable year when the team's expected to be poor anyway. So it wouldn't make sense to fast track a kid right away. So going back to Couturier, like, I don't know if I'd be comfortable just drafting a guy because he is NHL ready. Personally,
I've heard people say they're not so sure if he is, like, but he's obviously not going to learn anything by repeating another in the Quebec League next year as a 19-year-old. So that's going to be a real delicate situation to handle. But right now, I think Nugent Hopkins and Adam Larson, it's obviously between those two to go one or two, and it just depends on whether, I guess, the Oilers decide to go for the center or go for the defenseman. And, you know, Larson, I mean, saw him at the World Juniors, obviously impressive. I mean, I think it's real ridiculous that every Swedish defenseman is held to the Nick Lidström standard. Well, he's not Nick Lidström, so, you know, how good could he can't be any good. It's just like, okay, yeah. I mean, that's like comparing every defenseman to Bobby, from the OHL to Bobby Orr or something. And we don't do that because we know that's ridiculous.
Ryan Ellis could be that guy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's kind of interesting, right? I guess just to kind of put a cap on the Couturier thing or whatever. I mean, we've talked about draft strategies and whatnot throughout the year, and time and time again we see in other sports guys that are so-called more, you know, ready for the pro leagues that get drafted high, and quite often they might see a little bit of early success and then they just kind of flatten out. Examples of that, you know, huge debate, Mario Williams over Reggie Bush at the time. People thought the Texans were absolutely crazy for drafting Mario Williams over Reggie Bush. And, well, surprise, surprise, look who's ended up being the far better player at the NFL level. So just one example is the thing with Couturier. I mean, it's tough, right? We haven't had a top pick in so long. So if he's on the board and he's the guy that might be the most NHL ready, maybe you're concerned about, well, the Senators are going to take him just because they can get a top pick into the lineup and maybe sell some tickets out of it or whatever. So, well, I thought they were
a lot more enthusiastic about Landeskog generally, just with the, you know, the
whole
Swedish connection.
Yeah, and I've read elsewhere that Colorado has that same kind of interest. And if you notice, Colorado's lower in the standings, they'll have a better shot at taking a player like that. But yeah, like, a lot of people view Landeskog as this heir apparent to Alfredson's throne.
Well, it makes sense why Colorado would be interested in him too, because they're kind of set down the middle. I don't know if they're going to shop Stastny or what, but they're set down the middle for some time. So maybe they go with a winger.
Right, because, exactly. They have Stastny, Duchesne. Is Yip a center as well? I believe so.
Landeskog can play. He can
play center
as well?
He's
one of those guys who can sort of play either
interchangeable
center or wing. I mean, Kitchener plays him a lot more on the wing.
It's interesting, though, because like a couple weeks ago, he might have even said it on our podcast last time he was on, but Cyril Leader has come out. I think it was on the Healthy Scratches program where he said whomever that we take this year with a top five pick, that player is going to play in the NHL next year. So already they're marketing these guys. And as a fan, I kind of have concerns that, you know, obviously it's one thing to like generate this buzz to boost some season ticket sales because everybody wants to see these young kids thrive. I just wonder if they're placing the business interests of the team ahead of perhaps the developmental interests of the team, and whether or not this is kind of creating like increased expectations for whomever steps in next year will be like a productive player at the NHL level.
I would second that, Graham, because I mean that seems the exact opposite of what you're doing when you're trying to, you know, draft on spec. I mean, that just doesn't seem like a good idea. I mean, I like I say, the NHL drafts a lot more like baseball. You're drafting guys to be good in 3 or 4 years. I mean, obviously with the hair trigger tempers of maybe some owners. Not that there's one like that in this market at all.
Francois shaking his head.
You can't do that, but
fucking Captain Spray Tan.
but like I say, I was mentioning, you'd rather have the controllable years be a little bit later when the guy's closer to maturity. But
yeah, why would you want to pay a prospect more money when your team has a better chance of being good than, you know, it's just a matter of like controlling a guy's years,
unless
making sure he's affordable.
Thing where you want the guy on there because his cap hit is larger than the money you're actually paying him, and that will get you to the salary floor or something.
maybe that's part of the consideration. I never really looked at it from that angle.
The Senators are nowhere near that boat. So.
But, I mean, let's say we end up drafting Nugent Hopkins. There's no way that guy can play in the NHL next year.
No, he'd have to go back to
There's no way that physically he can play in the NHL. I mean, it's just crazy to even suggest that. So maybe the brass is already assuming it's going to be Landeskog or Couturier. Because there's no way, I mean, there's no way you can say under, you know, all circumstances, whoever they draft is going to play in the NHL next year. There's no way Nugent Hopkins is ready to play in the NHL next year.
No, he's a pretty wispy dude. I mean, obviously, he's, you know, once the season ends in Red Deer, you'll, you know, go wherever it is they do and work with the personal trainer and show up for the NHL Combine, you know, looking like he can bench press the TD building in Toronto. But and right now he is a pretty, you know, he's not a big kid at all. And I think he's obviously the most talented one out there. I mean, 106 points in the WHL as a 17-year-old. I mean, you'd have to go back a while to find it the last time like someone did that in his draft season in the Western Hockey League.
Even looking back to like a guy like Stamkos, like that's another kid who had all the talent in the world, but he had developmental problems in his first season because the coaching staff wouldn't trust him because they didn't think he was strong enough.
Yeah, and you look what he did when he was in Sarnia. I mean, he was almost a goal a game player, which, I mean, when does that ever happen anymore? I think that year he played 70 games for the Sting and he had 69 goals. When you combine the playoffs, and like I say, the team took time. I also think Tyler Seguin should have come back to the OHL this year with the Plymouth Whalers. I mean, he's got his trials and tribulations with Boston, but I mean, he might have been better served just to have come back. But I mean, the Bruins felt the way it's obviously their decision, and I'm just sort of saying the Bruins had their own rationale for it. But I think in the long term, there's a pretty good case that he should have been back in Plymouth.
That's probably pretty apparent right now, but again, they probably had no idea what was happening down the middle there with Savard and everything to start the season.
I mean, you can't, and you don't, and once you send him back, you can't get him back. So, I mean, it's obviously a tricky situation, but I mean, overall, for his, I think, long-term development, I don't think he would have been hurt if he'd gone back to the Plymouth
Whalers.
If
they could make that decision right now, I think they probably would have changed that back then. But
yeah.
Mind you, Boston is such a strong, good team. You know, it's a kind of an uncommon situation where you're having like a blue chip talent getting drafted into a top of the conference team. And I think that's kind of a unique opportunity to bring a young kid into an environment with like a winning culture with veterans who are playing at a high level. So to a certain extent, you know what, he might actually in the long run have ended up being better served staying with Boston this year. It's not like he's going to like a bottom of the conference team where he's going to be called upon to log a lot of minutes and might develop bad habits because he feels pressure to produce. So I think it could have gone either way. I'm not saying that, like, maybe going back to Plymouth and just working out some kinks.
Going back to Plymouth, I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know if he's being hurt by staying in Boston.
Yeah, so it's kind of a unique situation, I think, from that standpoint.
I don't want to compare the Senators to the New York Islanders, but I think if you ask Pierre Maguire, Josh Bailey is another player whose development was just, it hit the wall just by rushing this kid too soon. And that was a kid who, there's no need to rush a kid right into a bad organization with no coaching stability, no general manager stability, and it's just a poorly run franchise.
Yeah. Yeah, and same thing deal this year. Nino Niederreiter, I mean, really dodged a bolt because the Islanders ultimately did decide to send him back to the Portland Winterhawks. I mean, and just like he was in over his head a bit. And it was the kind of thing, well, we drafted you fifth overall, so you have to play in the NHL now. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. Meanwhile, like, you know, his teammate Ryan Johansson goes one pick ahead of him to Columbus, and Columbus never even considered keeping him. And I don't even know if they will next year. I think that's going to be an interesting one to watch. Just, you know, when you start thinking of the next World Junior, because he'll probably be the guy in the role Braden Schenn had this year, if he's available to them. But, you know, Columbus was just like, yeah, we think he's going to be the best player, but he's going right back to the WHL, and he'll keep developing there.
Did anyone watch the game last night?
Saw the Sens 3 goals.
That was
it? Saw Vinny LeCavalier goal. That's about it.
I must confess, I was actually watching the Sens game, and then I flipped over to the NCAA, and I got myself a little bit of Jimmer Fredette fever going, because he was just knocking everything down, and I couldn't stop watching the BYU basketball game after that. So I unfortunately did not manage to get back around to the Sens game, I have to confess.
Yeah, and we have to say TSN's just doing an amazing job covering this tournament.
That sounded like sarcasm.
I had no idea that Gonzaga had 3 Canadian players. Did you, Graham?
No. They're really pumping out those kids in Texas, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Those guys are ballers, though. Like, they're really good players, actually.
Tristan Thompson. Yeah.
Did you know that they were Canadian, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was made apparent. That was made very clear.
Like they should be a big deal when they're like 16, just the same way a 16-year-old hockey player is. Not we shouldn't be hearing about them just now. It would be like hearing about Taylor Hall just now, basically.
Yeah, and how about John Stockton Jr. there running the point for Gonzaga? Awesome.
But getting back to the Senators last night, I think if you look over the course of the past couple of weeks, we've seen a number of players put up some, you know, modest numbers, have some decent success in the short time that they've been here. Two of the names that step out the most are guys like Curtis McElhinney and Craig Anderson. And I'm just wondering, like, there's a lot of hype and buildup considering these small sample sizes that these players have put up over the course of the past, like, what, 10 games? And I just wonder, is it kind of dangerous to romanticize about what these guys have done in such a short period of time when we have their whole body of work to judge?
Yeah, I mean, to give you a leaf example, James Reimer, I mean, comes in, you know, plays over his head for the first 15 games, then, you know, like water, finds his own level eventually, right? So you can't get too carried away on this. You know, goalies have hot streaks, and sometimes they just happen to come in their first 10 games or 15 games with a new team. Happens all the time. I'm sure you saw James Myrtle and Gabe Desjardins did some piece on that. They're like, okay, here's all these guys, their first 15 games in the NHL who put up, you know, such a save percentage. And it's like a mixed bag. Okay, you got a Vezina trophy in there, and then you've got a couple guys who were never heard from again, like Kevin Hodgson. It's like he came, he went.
It was like, know? Jim Carrey won the Vezina the 1 year.
Yeah.
And like just literally, I think, fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah, he won the Vezina, and it was a lockout shortened season, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah,
and then he went to Boston, and then, yeah. That was it. He was done.
He never
the net detective, they used to call him.
The net detective, yeah. Very creative.
only hockey, like, people can come up with a nickname that good, you know?
But looking at a player like Ryan Shannon, there's a lot of love being given for this guy. I think he has like 9 points in his past 12 games. And for a team that lost a bunch of, you know, like they lost the middle of their lineup. They lost Peter Regan, Mike Fisher, and Chris Kelly over the course of the last month. And this is a guy who's kind of stepped in. He's put up some decent numbers. But I don't see there being a ton of pressure on the organization to re-sign a guy like this, because he doesn't really project as a top 6 forward on any good team.
Oh, absolutely not. I'd go as far to say on a bad team, but I think for that guy to be able to excel and do anything, he'd have to be in a top six role. Like, I would not like to bring that guy back as a bottom six forward, because to me, he doesn't do anything there. He's not big enough to do anything that I'd want from bottom six forward. And we see it now. Like, he's making some plays. He's scoring some goals. He scored a beauty last night, by the way, though. Did you see his goal?
It was a little bit fantastic. It was a nice pass by Condra to get it to him, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was nice, but not a huge Ryan Shannon fan. Ryan Fanninchan.
But as Jason Spezza showed in overtime, you don't need to have a nice breakaway move to score on Dwayne Rollison. Getting back to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, say that's a player who falls in Ottawa's lap at the third position or so. Let's say that's a guy that Ottawa wants in drafts.
Yeah, that would be found money.
is Ryan Shannon a guy that you would actually retain on a short-term deal as a stopgap player? Or would you be comfortable pursuing other players on the market?
I think you'd really want to see what's out there, just in terms of if you can find that sort of guy, you know, organizational soldier, or someone who's, you know, been blocked, you know, just by his former organization having a lot of depth at his position or whatnot.
Salary cap problems.
Yeah, salary cap problems. I mean, something
like that.
Yeah, the Senators are, I think, I haven't had a chance to check Cap Geek lately, but I think they're not up against it for next year, are they?
God, no.
No.
God, no.
Exactly.
What, the floor?
No. The ceiling?
Exactly.
I don't know. I got to agree with Creech on this one, actually. Like, the thing with Shannon, he's kind of a tweener, right? His game is, like, his skill set is suited for a top six role, but he's one of those guys where if you have to fill out the roster and there's really nothing available on the open market, sure, because I don't think he's going to have a bevy of pro-level contract offers. So I think it's just one of those situations. You look at the open market, if you can bring in a couple guys, UFAs, you probably can bring more to the table in like a second/third-line role than Ryan Shannon, then you probably walk away from him. If you have to fill out the roster or carry him as the extra forward, then yeah, keep him around. But it should not be a priority to retain Ryan Shannon under any circumstances, I don't think.
I think I'd be comfortable bringing Curtis McIlhenny back to the equation. And I only say that because I kind of want the team to bottom out in next year's strong draft. And I've seen what Curtis McIlhenny can do over the length of a season. And I'm raising my hands.
You've got Nail Yakupov fever already.
Oh, I do. I watched that guy's highlights.
He's just such an arsonist.
You know, if next year was this season and Ottawa was playing themselves out of a better lottery pick, I'd be fuming.
No, what you need to do is you bring back McIlhenny, okay? And then when you start to tank as your number one, and then when you start to tank, you trade him for Brian Elliott, and then you really tank. So bring Elliott back.
Strategies to tanking next season. Yakupov, that guy looks legit. And that's why I know a lot of fans are clamoring for the Landeskog, that we need a strong winger as a potential replacement for Alfredson down the line. But if Ottawa does get help down the middle of this draft, there's so many good wingers available next year that I'm not even, it's such a short-term mentality to be oh, we got to replace Alfredson now. Let's go find the heir apparent. The strength of next year's draft already has me drooling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, granted, you tend to find out more about these guys as they get closer to it. But, yeah, there's a ton of defensemen out there. I mean, Ryan Murray and probably being the big one, the kid in Everett who was, you know, captain of Canada's under-18 team back in the summer, even though he was, I think, the youngest kid on the team. And then... You know, then the Yakupov, and there's a few, you know, blanking on names here. Too focused on this draft, I guess. But 101 points for a really, really bad team in Sarnia. So, you know, he's the real deal. I mean, he's the one guy in the OHL right now who I think you can literally point to and say that guy's worth the price of admission. Because he's going to do something every night, and you know it's going to be good. And thankfully, Sarnia's got the, you know, Alex Galchenyuk kid who can sort of play off of him. They need him there because he's the only guy I can keep up with Yakupov.
Why do you keep pointing at me every time you have nothing to say?
Because I'm moderating.
You just keep pointing at me that you have nothing to say.
Does anybody else want to ask this?
It's like a green light,
because
I'm
the one asking all the questions here. So, I mean, if somebody wants to throw something out there,
I don't know enough about next year's draft yet.
Take the ball and run with it.
Everyone just keeps saying there's a lot of defensemen.
There is a lot of love, though, for Gabriel Landeskog.
I don't have an issue with that, though.
I'm just
if we get Landeskog, I'll be happy. There's your first line winger for Spezza right away, you know.
But if he's having success playing with Mahalik and Butler, I don't understand the emphasis to go find him a winger who's a rookie, who, you know, I don't want to throw a guy right into the fire right away, right? I don't know. That's my personal opinion. But
I'm happy with anyone in the top three.
Anyone in the top three?
My guy's Nugent Hopkins. Like, if we could pick first overall, that's who I'd pick. I think he projects as the guy that has the most potential to be a superstar in the league. But I'm happy if I get an Adam Larson or Gabriel Landeskog for sure.
Yeah, if you get one, you'll be all right if you get one of those three. I'm not as much of a Landeskog fan as some people are. I mean, a lot of people are just like, okay, he's, you know, well, I'm sure a lot of people made a point to, you know, when Kitchener was here, I guess 2 weeks ago, to play the 67s. I think a lot of people made a point to check in that game. They're like, okay, he's got the, you know, he's, you know, man among boys. And I wish more people would call him Country Forest, by the way, because that was
the
what
literal translation
literally
yeah.
translates to from Swedish to English.
That's like round leaf for round black.
Yeah, maybe it sounds too much like Big Country. Like you don't want
at
to
least
back.
At least he doesn't have that hairstyle though.
Oh, that was brutal, eh?
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
But then you're kind of like, not quite as extreme a concern as there is with Kucherov. It's sort of the same deal. He's that late 92, late 92. And you're kind of like, well, he's more physically advanced than the guys he's playing against. But, I mean, he's not really like, he's not putting up huge, you know, ginormous numbers either. So, and he's on a pretty good team in Kitchener. I mean,
yeah, but they don't have any scorers on that team, anyways. It's more of a
more
of a offense by committee in Kitchener.
Well, they got the leading scorer in the league,
Axon. But after other than that,
and they got Ryan Murphy. So, and they got Jerry D'Amigo. So you're kind of like,
Jerry D'Amigo.
would like to see them tear it up a little bit more.
But hasn't he only played? He's missed.
He's missed a lot of games. So I'm not basing anything.
I'm thinking
on
of Mississauga for the scoring by
committee. Yeah, well, that's scoring by committee taken way too far to the other end of the spectrum. I mean, I don't know how you're going to win a Memorial Cup with no one who's in the top 10.
I think that's what I was referring to though when I was thinking of Landeskog. But
no worries.
I did like his two way game. I liked. Were you at the game?
Yeah.
I thought he was pretty good. He was on the bench rallying everybody up. There's a couple big hits.
Yeah, he's a leader. And, I mean, he's definitely a leader. I mean, the fact he can come to North America, you know, and be captain of his OHL team, I mean, speaks well, very well for him. I mean, and it's the same thing. You know, you're going to be getting a guy who's going to be a top six player. It's just, are you getting a superstar, or are you sort of getting like a Jordan Staal type of guy? Who's going to obviously be an integral part of any team, of any good team. But
if you listen to the Canadian propaganda machine, that guy's going to be like the next best Canadian center.
Oh man, everyone's picking him. Like when TSN has like dead airtime to fill, it's always like, and we're going to get the 2014 Canadian Olympic team picks from Pierre Aal, and yeah, like Jordan Staal is on that. Everyone picked Jordan Staal on that team. And I'm going like, what's going on here? Like, are we? Like, come on. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a good player. But, like, do we not have anyone who is more offensively talented than Jordan Staal to put on an Olympic team?
Well, last I checked, goals weren't that important in a hockey game.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. Yeah, you win a cup with good old Canadian boys who can't skate but just hit everything that moves.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it worked in the World Junior for the first 35 minutes of the gold medal game.
Oh, just drawn back to that.
Bad memories.
More disappointing than being a Mets fan.
That hurt worse than Aaron Boone in 2003. Like, that was one of the most monumental collapses I've ever seen.
And I was there, and it was just like, you could start to see it coming by the second period. You're like, oh God, Dave Cameron's coaching this like he's in Brampton on a Thursday night.
That's perfect segue, because Dave Cameron is a name being actually thrown out there as a potential coach for the Senators next year because of his connections to Eugene Melnyk through St. Mike's.
Yeah, I can see. I mean, it's a natural connection, right? I don't know if the way he coaches is the best thing for. I mean, that system that they play, you know, very, you know, team oriented. No, I don't know if that's how well that would translate to an NHL team.
Well, everybody loves a screamer, right? For the development of young kids.
I don't know if he's a screamer though. I think he's one of those guys who sort of, you know, he
put the fucking pylons on the ice during practice and that.
He's one of those guys. Yeah. I think he's good at changing up his approach. I think, you know, he's, you know, good with dealing with personalities. And you know, some people can't respond to being yelled at. Some people can. You know, good at reading. I think he's good at reading players that way. But then you sort of. But I mean, I remember we were talking to one sort of scout, and he was like, the second that, you know, they announced that Cameron was going to coach, because initially Bob Bugner was named to coach Team Canada, then he gets an NHL job, and when they replaced Cameron, he's like, the second I thought, I was like, oh, that team's going to finish second. You know, they won't be an attacking team, and they won't put away a good team, and lo and behold, I mean, that turned out to be very prophetic. And that was, you know, told to be, like, before the Sweden game in the World Junior. So, I obviously think very highly of Dave Cameron. I just don't know if it would mesh well with an NHL team.
Well, I think it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I've been kind of I'm not going to say kind of. I've been a harsh critic of Corey Clouston year, because I've called into question. Back in, what was it, October, Graham? I called into question like his ability to, when the team was playing like well, sort of. I called into question his ability to deal with pro athletes. And lo and behold, we get a lot of those veterans out. You have kids that are auditioning for NHL jobs who have no choice but to listen to the coach right now, and he's getting more out of them. So I think, you know, there's something to be said there in terms of Corey Clouston's ability to deal with pros, and I think I'd have that same concern with anyone you're bringing in from the OHL ranks in terms of how their coaching approach would translate at the pro level when you have different personalities, when you have these prima donnas, and when sometimes I really do think you just kind of have to look the other way and let guys do what they're going to do.
Isn't the rule of thumb generally don't hire a coach who's the same as your last coach? Like, isn't that always the rule in professional sports?
Yeah, just to mix it up a bit.
Yeah, so I think that you'd be better off to look for, you know, someone who's been like an assistant in the NHL for a while and knows the ins and outs. Has Kirk Muller come up at all? Or
I've seen him mentioned by Elliot Friedman in his like 30 thoughts blogs. Okay. That's a name kicked around. I've seen Randy Cunningworth kicked around as a potential. I think Garriock was one of the first to bring that up. But like, there's some guys out there who actually have NHL experience. As long as it's not Tony Granato, I think we'll all be okay with that.
I think they'd be better off looking within the league. Maybe generally, that's not a criticism.
Well, I mean, that's assuming that's Corey. They're not going to move forward with Corey Clouston next year. Like, who knows really what's going to go on? I mean, as much as we thought it was a sure deal that Murray and Clouston weren't coming back next year, who knows? Like, Murray's green-lighted on signing Phillips to a 3-year extension, which you think a GM that's going on the way out would not be green-lighted to sign a deal like that. So, who knows? Both of them could be back next year.
Yeah, that's certainly possible.
It's a bit of a conundrum. You don't really know. You don't know whether or not the organization's going to bring in some more yes men who will just kind of like go with Murray, go with whatever Melnick says, and it's just, you don't really know what the mandate is.
No, but I mean, like, when we... when they had that press conference where, was it Melnick came out and said both of them were going to see it through till the end of the year. At that time, what we were able to take from that sort of like the in between the lines was, well, they won't be back after this year. I'm not so sure about that anymore. I really am not. So it's like, who knows? And if both of them come back next, I mean...
Well, it goes back to like Melnick's appearance on the Fan 590 radio station in Toronto. Like, Murray convinced him after they were discussing the team's recent run of success. And they're like, hey, maybe this turnaround won't be 3 to 4 years. Maybe it will be done in 1 year.
Yeah, and I mean, I had to laugh like, you know, a couple months back. It was like the, you know, the Ottawa Sun, the newspaper where I used to work. And it was like this big Sunday front cover was like, should the Senators rebuild? And I was just like, did I like, you know, step into a time warp? And am I back in like 2008 or 2009? Because, I mean, that's when the question should have been asked. But, I mean, you do wonder about that. I mean, what was it like, Melnick, we're going all the way this year. And that was like, it's just like, what?
Yeah.
Actually, like, I think it was buckle up, we're going all the way this year.
Yeah, all the way to the lottery. But it's just kind of like, I mean, if you have this perspective, like if you won your last game, okay, everything's going to be fine from now on. I mean, that's if you're, you know, if your horizon ends at the tip of your nose, I mean, you're not going to go anywhere as an organization.
I just find it a bit odd that an organization can come forth at around the NHL trade deadline time and say, hey, you know what? We're going to stick to this process. We're not going to put a timeline on it. We're going to get there when we get there, but mark our words, we're going to be an improved team that's going to move forward with this collection of young players. And then for like a couple weeks later to hear an owner come on a public forum like the Fan 590 where fans from around the world, doesn't matter where you go on radio, like Senators fans are going to hear it. And for him to say, yeah, this process might only be a year or two, it scares the crap out of me. It's essentially all the goodwill that you built up by moving players like Mike Fisher and Chris Kelly to to reemphasize that, hey, we're going to get younger, cheaper, more exciting. We're going to get rid of some complacent veterans who are probably expendable. And to kind of like, I just feel like they've undid what they built up by re-signing Chris Phillips.
Yeah.
And then Melnick's comments on the radio. It's just like, it's the same thing that I hated before all those moves were made in the first place.
Yeah, stick with something. I mean, stop, vacillating over. I mean, at some point, as an organization, I mean, you have to accept what you had that was great and fun. I mean, I've lived here for 5 years, and I mean, when the Sens had the run to the final in 07, that was the most fun time I've ever had living in Ottawa. And I mean, you have to accept that that's gone, and you don't want to become like, otherwise you become the Kansas City Royals. And I mean, there was a team that was a dominant small market franchise in baseball in the late 70s and early 80s, and then they hung on to like the same old guys for years and years, and then and then they were uncompetitive for like 20 years, and finally now they might finally actually get back. I mean, baseball's obviously different, much different game, much different business, but. I mean, you just can't keep holding on to that old glory, basically.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I mean, yeah, baseball is a different game, but I think the concepts behind building a good franchise they're transferable across all sports.
Yeah, I think they're universal. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to sort of tear down and rebuild.
I think they've done a pretty good job of it. What would they have got for Phillips' second round pick?
I'm working under the assumption that Chris Phillips just didn't want to leave town
yeah.
because of whatever unforeseen reasons. And personally, I just believe that was a player who probably could have been moved, but he just ultimately didn't want to waive his no-trade clause, and that's why he's still here. I just don't – looking at his contract, I think a 3-year contract is a long commitment to give a player of his ilk, who's had like a terrible season by all accounts, and they re-upped him for 3 years, even though I know that the team isn't expected to be good anytime soon. But – I just don't see that as a guy that you just want to hold on to for 3 years just because he's been with the organization for so long. It just screams of a public relations move as opposed to a firm hockey decision. I think that's a guy that they could have signed to a 1-year deal and said, hey, if you really want to be here, play well next season, and then we'll talk negotiations then. But I think Ottawa in this situation had all the leverage. They could have walked away from him and said, hey, put your money where your mouth is. If you want to sign for cheap, do it. I know, like in interviews, he said, "Hey, maybe I walked away for more money on the free agent market." But who's to say he did? He's had such a bad season.
Yeah, I mean, the market can really, the bottom can really drop out of the market for a defenseman over 30, like a stay at home guy like that. They might have like really thrown him a life preserver there.
Well, it almost reminds me of that Matt Holliday contract that he signed in St. Louis. Like he kind of offered himself around the league, and then he realized, "Hey, nobody's going to give me the money that I want." And he ultimately re-signed with St. Louis. And I think Pujols was probably going to go through the same thing this offseason once he realizes that Boston and New York are probably not going to be able to, or at least want to, because they already have decent players at those positions.
Well, I just think there's a shift in the way fans look at these things now. It used to be, you got excited. Okay, we got this free agent or that free agent. Now fans are like, I know, maybe it's just the times we're living in. Now everyone's like, that's too much money for this guy. And all you're doing is overpaying for past performance now. And people are expecting a lot more out of pro sports organizations. Like they want to sort of see they want to see the vision thing. They want to see everyone come up with the next diamond. Well, not diamond in the rough, because I mean that's getting harder and harder to do. But they want to see the next. They want to see like someone come up with like Ben Zobrist,
Want like affordable players who can outperform the value of their contracts.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's what everybody wants. Like bargain players.
And I don't think that's like a fringy, sabermetrics type thing. I think that's the mainstream now.
Everybody's nodding their heads silently.
Like when the Sens signed Alex Kovalev a couple of years ago, I was like, really? Like
those power play specialists.
Like,
so
that's like something like the Jays did when Paul Godfrey was president.
Oh, I mean, like, look at what
I've heard of that. I've heard of him. Let's get him.
No, but I mean, like, look at the absolute disaster that Colangelo has turned the Raptors into during his tenure there. And it's like free agent signing after free agent signing that doesn't work out. He should have traded Bosch probably a year before he even started to think about if he should trade Bosch or not to get the maximum value on it. Didn't. You knew full well Bosch wasn't going to stay.
No.
Like, it's just ridiculous. I mean, and... I don't even know where I was going with this. I think I'm just frustrated in general.
I haven't watched a single Raptors game all season, so I don't even know if I've watched a Raptors highlight this season.
Has there been any?
And I have Bargnani in fantasy, so.
Ooh, good thing that so defense you, so isn't counted. Good
about,
thing
you defense you know doesn't I count don't even fantasy. Care about rebounds.
neither does he, apparently.
You're 7 foot center, and he gets like 2 boards.
Just getting back to the Senators, though. Like, if we're talking about teams that lack vision and kind of just like the cut and paste. Just, you know, just moves that just don't seem to work out. And, yeah, like, if we're looking back at the Kovalev and Gonchar signings, like, those were the perfect examples of teams, you know. You're like, all right, well, we just traded for David Runblatt, and we already have Erik Karlsson in the system. And then Patrick Wierkoch projects as an offensive defenseman on the blue line. We have Chris Campoli. We're signing this guy to a 3-year contract. Why?
Yeah,
exactly. But in retrospect, like, I was kind of for it because I for that money I would have rather had him than Volchenkov. But I think moving forward, I wish I could take that comment back and say, yeah, I would rather have Volchenkov and not hold on to either of Gonchar or Phillips.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
that's a good point.
Volchenkov kind of was sort of the glue that kind of sort of held a lot together.
I just think the value. I think probably I placed too much emphasis on the intangibles that he would have brought to this team. I think if you look at Erik Karlsson play, I wouldn't watch Karlsson this year and say, oh, you know what? Gonchar's made that guy a better player. He's made him a better player, and that's why he's minus 38 or whatever the hell he is right now. he's got the worst plus minus in the NHL, and I just think intangibles are probably more overrated than people wish to admit.
Oh, for sure. I always thought, you know, all that intangibles and I think harmony is, you know, team chemistry. I mean, people talk so much about that, and all the jockocracy types talk about it, but I mean,
you gotta
at the end of the day,
room.
I mean, If a team has the, you know, ability, I mean, they'll find a way to get along, you know, well enough.
Usually I find in Ottawa, though, once the organization starts, the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, well, he's such a big part of the community and he's great in the room. That's usually the red flag. Like, Todd White went through that. Randy Cunningworth was another. Sean Van Allen.
Redden.
You can just go down the list. It's just, you know, that's the warning flag.
And Redden parlayed being good in the community to, like, what, like a 5 or 6 year deal with the Rangers? So who knows? Maybe it does pay to be good.
How does anybody sign him to 6.5 over 6 years? How does that happen?
Well, and that's, we were saying the bottom can drop out for defensemen, but you see these, even the Gonchar contract is actually borderline ridiculous right now, too, for a guy his age. Like, there's always two morons out there that just ruin the market for everyone. And, no, it's true, though. You always have, like, your Glenn Sather, someone who's got a little bit of money to throw around, like, even Chicago signing Brian Campbell to that ludicrous contract was just stupid. Like, it's,
but even go to your Campbell point, that's an organization that, you know, they had like these young and exciting players coming on the way, and they said, hey, you know what, the fans have been behind this, we're going to reward you, the fans for like this patience. So they go out and make, like, they felt compelled to make a splash in free agency to generate more buzz, and that's why they signed guys like Cristobal Huey and Brian Campbell, and like a week later those guys are throwing out the opening pitches at Wrigley Field. It's like, yeah, I don't know. Like,
when I was there, Kyle Korver threw out the opening.
But you shouldn't let the fans dictate. Like, I just find it too often, probably more so in hockey than some other sports, is that PR drives a lot of the moves these days.
Yeah. I mean, it would be awful boring, but if everyone could be like Bill Polian with like the Indianapolis Colts, well, you know, you're only worth this. Bye-bye. I mean, or be like the Tampa Bay Rays, you know. I mean, that's the prudent way to be.
But, yeah. Well, I mean,
when he is entertaining, that's for sure.
Well, it's like Bob Sanders, you know, arguably the most one healthy, most dynamic defensive safety in the NFL. I mean, former defensive player of the year, and Polian just goes, well, you can't stay on the field, so we encourage you to look at other options, right?
Yeah.
And personally, like, if you could say, like, would Brian Murray make a comparable decision, say, to walk away from someone? You know, we don't really have anyone that I can compare to Bob Sanders, but my gut feeling would be like Murray would never, you know, if you sort of,
sure.
Murray would never sort of I make think, that decision or, like Polian made, you know, in a comparable situation.
Well, I think he could have with the Healy situation if he acknowledged at the time that, hey, we just lost our best goal scorer. This is, you know, considering where the team has been in the last 2 years, this is probably the best opportunity we've had to sell the fans on a rebuild. And what he did was, instead of saying, all right, I understand that I have to take Jonathan Chichu back because we have to absorb some kind of cap hit here. But what he did was he acquired a guy like Mahalik in a second-round pick instead of going after their best prospects and players who are ready to contribute now. Like, that's a guy who could have had a Logan Couture here if he was willing to bite the bullet and not, you know.
Joe Pavelski, maybe. Well,
you know,
or
maybe. Like, but, like, don't sell the fans on, like, having to, like, always compete now, because you might set the team back, like, 5 years.
His pants were probably tied. He probably, like,
no. Well, that's part of it too. You always question, like,
but his pants were probably tied with the owner. I don't think he was looking at rebuild at that point. That's probably why he brought Kovalev in too.
Yeah, it was kind of like the old, well, we'll show Heatley. We'll go further than the Sharks in the playoffs. And did that happen? I don't remember.
I think it's inconsequential.
It was like Dan Gilbert before Dan Gilbert. Yeah,
it is tough though. Like, I
likes that Comic Sans.
You wonder how much Murray's hands are tied, though, in regards to many of the moves that he's made in the past 4 years since the Stanley Cup Finals.
I bet the Kovalev one was not his.
Yeah, because some of these moves, you just wonder, like, and by all accounts, a lot of different people we've spoken to, it's like, you know, everyone says, like, Brian Murray is just a good hockey guy, and it's like, some of these moves just, it's just so disjointed with what you would think a good hockey guy would do in that type of situation. Like, so, who knows? I mean, I can't fault the owner. I mean, you know, he can't just endlessly piss, you know, money away. He's got to try and sell some tickets. So, but on the other hand, it's like, well, probably the best way to do that is to let your hockey people handle the hockey decisions, and ultimately, the product will sell itself if you put a good product out on the ice.
Ultimately, I think what I want is someone who is kind of cold, who has like that ruthless, not to be insulting.
You want Maggie Thatcher, basically.
I just want someone who's like responsible, can make good business decisions, and, you know, not to insult the players that you have on your team, but like, if you can make a cold-hearted, calculated decision that makes sense for the organization moving forward and gives you a better opportunity to win, whether it's this year or down the road, I want that guy over the guy who's, you know, pulling at my heartstrings. Yeah, Mike Fisher was dealt. I was shocked for about 10 minutes.
Oh, I couldn't believe some of the reactions that were in the media. Like, I mean, I obviously have an interesting vantage point because I'm a media person, but I'm not in the Ottawa media anymore, you know. But, and I was just kind of like, oh my god, did they not realize like this is like the best thing that they could have done was to trade Mike Fisher now?
And Nashville's going through it right now, right? Like, I think it was Bob McKenzie was on one of his panel discussions, and they were talking about Mike Fisher might not be the guy that David Poile thought he was.
Like, he might not be.
I think he has like one goal and like three assists.
Like 4 points in 15 games. Or,
and he's a minus player in Nashville.
In defense of Mike Fisher, he's been looking like he's been playing with a semi to very serious injury all year. Like, he just looks off. That, and more than just like a guy being cold off, like off.
Yeah, he's not throwing every body check that he usually does. And
he has not been playing his style of game. And it has nothing to do, like, I mean, he still gets there, right? He still has the speed, but he's not playing that physical game that you're used to seeing Mike Fisher play. He was passing up on a lot of shots too. Like, it's just very uncharacteristic things that Mike Fisher was doing all year. So, but I mean, I know what you're saying. Like, the guy is not, if David Poile thought he was getting a second line center, well, I'm sorry to disappoint him, but he wasn't getting a second line center, healthy or not. So,
does anybody have anything else that they want to hit on?
No, Earl, thanks for having me. I really appreciate coming in here.
No, I'm glad you came in. I'm glad you came in. Creech, glad you came in as well.
Always fun.
Yeah, we should do it more often. All right, so I guess that wraps it up.
I'll just give you the head nod and the finger point.
Head nod and the finger point, so we're all settled.
I don't have anything to say, so you can't just
perfect.
Point at me.
All right, done. All right, well, thanks, listeners, for listening to the Sixth Sense podcast. Hopefully we'll catch you again. All right, thanks, guys.